Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participant lines are in a listen-only mode. After today's presentations, you will have the opportunity to ask questions, and you may do so at that time by pressing star then one if you would like to ask a question over the phone. Today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections to this, please disconnect at this time. Now, I will turn the call over to your host for today, Dr. Andrea Robles. Doctor, you may begin.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks so much to those on the phone and in the room for joining us in our first research and evidence webinar of 2018. As Brad said, my name is Andrea Robles, and I work for the Office of Research and Evaluation at the Corporation for National and Community Service, what we refer to as CNCS. For those of you who are listening to one of our webinars for the first time, I want to mention that our office objectives are to support our agency's mission by building knowledge on civic engagement, volunteering, and national service. We conduct in-house research, but also fund research through competitive grants to researchers, scholars, and dissertators at institutions of higher education and support research and evaluation of our programs and grantees. We strive to share and use our research findings in several ways, including research reports on our Evidence Exchange, which is a website on nationalservice.gov, an annual research summit, and a quarterly newsletter. Our webinar series is another way to share cutting-edge research like what you will hear from, like what you would hear today. Before I move into introducing our speakers, I'd like to cover a few housekeeping details. All participants will be in listen-only mode until the question and answer session following the presentation. As mentioned earlier, this webinar is being recorded, and we will post it online after the presentation. So for today's webinar, we will have introductory comments by Dr. Sherry Hoffman, who wears many hats, including being the Director of the Children and Youth Policy Division at the Department of Health and Human Services, as well as the Chair of Interagency Working Group on Youth Programs, which is a collaboration between 22 federal agencies and offices with the goal of coordinating to improve youth outcomes. This will be followed by a presentation by Dr. Rebecca Frazier, a JBS Research Associate. She led the analysis and report writing for this bundled evaluation that you will hear today and provided technical assistance to six programs participating in the evaluation. Finally, we will have concluding remarks from Linda Cook, who is a senior program officer for AmeriCorps Data National and works with Opportunity Youth grantees. After the speakers' presentations, we will conclude with a Q&A. One of our goals is to be able to make our research and findings accessible and useful to academics as well as practitioners. So please feel free to ask any questions or provide comments, and you could do so through the chat box or, like I said, in the Q&A time. So now I will hand this over to Dr. Sherry Hoffman.
Thank you so much, Andrea. Thank you to everybody for the invitation to join you here today. Very interested in the concept of bundling evaluations. It was a new concept to me when CNCS, Mary Hyde, and others came to our Interagency Working Group on Youth Programs meeting and presented some information about the study that was underway at the time. And it really struck a chord with me. I have some background as a program evaluator working in children's mental health programs before I came to the federal government. And the office where I sit in Health and Human Services is the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation. And so we're kind of always looking for new ideas and new ways to improve things and have a lot of the same challenges that I think probably a lot of folks on the webinar would face, in that it's difficult to find large enough sample sizes and to really get to the power for some of the results that you want to be able to show when you're looking at things like effectiveness of programs that you're delivering. And for the Interagency Working Group on Youth Programs, our audience is a lot of youth-serving organizations that are out there. We operate the website youth.gov, which is sort of a one-stop shop for a lot of information about our 22 partner agencies across the federal government and the things that they are doing with and for youth. And one of the things that a lot of those agencies tell us that their grantees struggle with is program evaluation. And so we're always looking for new information that we can put out and new ways we can do that. And also thinking, we're starting to think as an interagency working group with all of these different partners. We've got everybody from CNCS and HHS, lots of offices in HHS, to the Department of Labor, to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, all of us trying to coordinate and collaborate towards one goal of improving youth outcomes. We're starting to think about how do we measure that across all of these different agencies with these different missions and different activities that they undertake to do this. How can we find common outcomes that we're trying to achieve, common measurements, those sort of things. So all of these ideas really started coming together, and we got very interested in this. And so I have been bugging our friends at CNCS for a while to hear about what's going on, so we're really looking forward to understanding more about how it was done. We think we can, the methodology that we hope that we can share across all of these federal agencies, as well as the youth-serving organizations that we try to serve. So I'm looking forward to it, and I will turn it over to Becca.
Thank you very much. No, I'm very excited to be here today and to finally have the opportunity to talk about the Bundled Evaluation Project. I want to start by thanking Adrian De Tomaso, who's here, who's been working on the project for the last 4 years. This has really been a labor of love, and we are excited to be able to share this methodology and in the forthcoming months to also share the results of the study, which will be posted on the Evidence Exchange shortly. But today, we're really going to focus on the methodology, and I'll talk a bit about how you can use a bundled evaluation methodology to translate learning into action, both for grant makers and also for smaller programs and nonprofits. So I'm going to start by talking about what a bundled evaluation is. So we've thrown that term around a little bit, and I want to clarify what I really mean by that. So a bundled evaluation approach bundles together small programs that have similar program models and outcomes into a single larger impact evaluation. And that evaluation approach is kind of a hybrid of traditional multi-site and clustered evaluation approaches. So traditionally, multi-site evaluation approaches look at the same program model across multiple sites and just do one evaluation of that identical program model, whereas a clustered evaluation is typically a little bit more participatory and exploratory, and so you're looking at a cluster of similar program models in a more exploratory way. So this is actually a combination of those two approaches and really designed to investigate impact. And the way that it does that is by using propensity score matching to create a matched group of treatment and comparison kids. In this case, we recruited comparison participants both from community partners who are serving similar youth and also from program applicants who were eligible for the program but did not ultimately enroll. We use that to create a matched comparison group, and then we use multi-level modeling to account for differences across the sites and the nested nature of the data. This approach is also really informed heavily by participatory evaluations. So CNCS from the very beginning wanted to make this an evaluation capacity building exercise, so not just a rigorous evaluation by an outside third party, but also an evaluation learning opportunity, one in which programs could build evaluation capacity through experiential learning. And so we had sites participate in comparison group recruitment and also in the data collection process throughout the course of the evaluation. So for this particular evaluation, CNCS chose to focus on efforts with opportunity youth. So we've defined opportunity youth as young people between the ages of 16 and 24 who are low income and either homeless, in foster care, involved in the juvenile justice system, unemployed, or not enrolled in or at risk of dropping out of an educational institution. So formerly, these might have been called disconnected youth. But we really view these as youth who present an opportunity for change. And according to recent estimates, there are more than 6.7 million opportunity youth in the U.S. currently. And CNCS really has begun recruiting those opportunity youth as AmeriCorps members and engaging them in national service projects. And so we were interested in looking at the impact of that participation in national service on youth outcomes. And so for the study, we wanted to investigate whether or not opportunity youth who participate in AmeriCorps show improvements in three domains, in education, employment, and in civic engagement, and whether those improvements were observed relative to a matched comparison group. So to participate in the study, we actually recruited 19 AmeriCorps sites from across the country. And I heard, Linda, that you deserve some credit for that recruitment process. So thank you so much for enlisting the support of our program. We actually have a mix of urban and rural sites, and program sites ranged in size from 5 opportunity youth members up to 85 opportunity youth members. So kind of a pretty diverse pool of sites participating in the evaluation. And we had around 1,100 youth who participated in the evaluation. And we administered the survey at 3 time points. So youth participated in the survey at the start of their term of service, at the conclusion of their term of service, and then 6 months after their term of service. A So this process really took place over a four-year period. So we started in 2014 with a feasibility study, really just looking at whether this was a viable approach. CNCS started the process really interested in building evaluation capacity and figuring out a solution to this problem of smaller sites who had limited evaluation capacity and resources. So we did this feasibility study. It seemed like sites were interested. The opportunity use bundle seemed like a good candidate. And so we moved forward in the next year with planning. And so all of the sites were involved in the planning process. They provided input on measures for the study. They also helped to develop plans for how they would implement the survey with their youth, and also comparison group recruitment strategies. And they began the pretest data collection in 2015. Again, with the pretest being administered as youth were beginning their term of service with AmeriCorps. In 2016, we administered the post-test, so that would be sort of as youth are finishing their term of service, and then also administered six-month follow-up data collection. So reaching out to youth, seeing how are things going in your life now that you've exited AmeriCorps. And then in 2017, we completed the follow-up data collection, cleaned the data, analyzed it, and authored the final report, which, as I mentioned, is under review at CNCS and will be available shortly. Okay, so now that I've told you a little bit about our general approach, I want to talk more broadly about how you can take this approach and assess, is this a good fit for me and for my organization, and how could I implement this approach to really promote learning among my grantees or among other organizations in my community. So I'll talk about how you can assess if it's a good fit first for the evaluator, because this is definitely a project you're going to want to do with an external evaluator, and then how to assess if it's a good fit for potential programs who could be a part of the bundle, and then we'll talk about some strategies for using it to promote learning, both by involving programs in the evaluation design and through the use of learning communities, and I'll share a few specific tools that you could use to promote evaluation capacity building and learning. Okay, so how do I assess if the bundled evaluation is a good fit? Well, first off, like I said, you're going to need a strong evaluation partner. And so if you are an evaluator, these are some questions you might think of for yourself. If you happen to be a funding agency, these are some questions that I would encourage you to think about as you're hiring an evaluator, which is really one of the first steps of this process. So first and foremost, you want to have somebody who has really good statistical and subject matter knowledge, because you're dealing with data from lots of sites with very different interests. You need to be able to statistically control for those differences, so you want someone who has that statistical knowledge. And you also want someone who has a good working understanding of the interests of the programs. So if you're dealing with opportunity youth, it helps to have somebody who's really familiar with that population and the challenges that the sites are really going to be encountering on the ground, right? Somebody who's very relatable in that way. Additionally, when you choose an evaluator, you're dealing with a lot of sensitive information, potentially personally identifiable information, so you want to have someone who has access to really good data management systems, right? We're talking about longitudinal data tracking of personally identifiable information, so good software in place for that, and then also good access to statistical analysis software to run the kinds of complex multi-level models that you're going to need for this type of evaluation. Also, flexibility is super important. So we had 19 sites. Everybody has a different interest, different challenges that they're experiencing on the ground, and so really being able to adapt to that in the moment is really important. And then I think having a team is also really important. Because this is really, like I said, there's a lot of complexities to the data collection with a multi-site evaluation like this. And so you want to have folks who can do that follow-up, who can call and administer the surveys, and then also having, like, your more advanced subject matter experts and your statistical folks as well, so having, like, a real team effort. And then last but not least, a lot of time, right? So like I said, this is a four-year process. You want to, in selecting an evaluator, you want to look for somebody who you can work with for an extended period of time. Now, once you select an evaluator, you need to be able to shift gears a little bit and think about, okay, how do I figure out which program to put in my bundle, right? And the first and probably most important thing is to really figure out programs that are similar, right? Like, does it make sense to have these programs in one bundle, right? And we said that this approach looks at programs that are similar but have slightly different program models, so they need to be able to at least agree upon a set of shared outcomes. And so all of the sites who participated in our evaluation worked together to build a collective logic model and to agree on a set of core outcomes that they were willing to track collectively across the bundle. And so it's really important that there be similarity across the programs. Also, this is something that we hadn't really anticipated at the beginning, but it really helps to have programs that have consistent start and stop dates across your bundle, because logistically it can be very challenging to manage data collection if folks are entering the program and exiting the program on a rolling basis. And so we think this methodology is great, but it seems to be best suited to programs that have a little bit more consistency so that they can manage the data collection, because sites with rolling enrollment really struggled with data collection because it was a large burden for them to be constantly administering the survey. Also, organizational support and capacity. I cannot emphasize this enough. Like, really having buy-in from all levels of the organization is essential to success for this type of evaluation. Because you have so many different stakeholders, you really need to have a commitment not only from, like, the executive leadership, but also, like, from the folks who are going to be on the ground working with the youth, that this is something that's valuable and important and that we're all in this together. So really making sure that you have that organizational support and also capacity. It does take a lot of time to implement this. And if you want programs to learn through the experience, they have to have the time and money to devote to the experience, right, to be able to participate in the data collection themselves. And that takes time. Also, I think for programs, it's really important to have a clear member management and tracking system. So, like I said, this is a longitudinal study, and so we need to be able to find them 6 months later. And so you can't work with programs who don't really have systems in place to do that. And also, we are interested in being able to understand how aspects of program implementation influence impact. And so it's important that programs are also documenting what types of activities program individual members are receiving, right? So what did Bob actually do? Did they do job skills training or not? And they need to have a system in place to do that so that when we look at impact, we can say kids who participated in X, Y, and Z activities are doing better than kids who did not. And not all of the programs that we worked with were really prepared for that level of member data management. And then last but certainly not least, it really helps to have a clearly agreed upon comparison group. So in our study, we used two different types of comparison groups. We used program applicants and youth from community partners. So for sites that are working with program applicants, we'd really encourage you to be sure that they have a documented history of oversubscription, not just saying like, oh, sure, I totally have oversubscription. Because when push comes to shove, a lot of sites thought that they would have more members applying, but actually didn't really have a sufficient pool for comparison group recruitment. And if they don't have that pool, really speaking to programs honestly about the importance of over-recruitment and having sites commit to being willing to over-recruit, even if that means that they have to turn some youth away. And then for community partners, really making sure that, one, that the youth who are at the community partner are really program eligible youth. So they are youth who would be eligible to participate in your program, right? So are they similar enough to really be a valid comparison group? And then does that community partner have the staff capacity and commitment to implement data collection themselves? And that was really challenging because those sites weren't receiving any incentives to participate in the study, and so trying to figure out how to get the community partners to commit to data collection over a longitudinal period was really challenging. So definitely thinking about that from the get-go is helpful. Okay, so once you figure out how to get your evaluator and you have all of the programs in your bundle, how do you make it participatory, right? How do you make it more than just an external evaluation that somebody is telling you to do? And so I think the way to do that is to involve programs in the evaluation design and the execution. So in terms of design, we invited programs to provide feedback on the survey measures. And we also, in terms of execution, really set clear expectations and check-ins where we were constantly communicating with the programs so that they had input throughout the evaluation process. We had each of the sites identified their own comparison groups. So they said, you know, here's a similar group of kids in our community that we think is a good fit for us. And they also developed their own individualized plans for survey implementation. So here's when we're going to collect the data, here's how we're going to collect it. And they participated in the data collection process. So they were on the ground building their own evaluation capacity by participating in the data collection. Additionally, we were really interested in creating a learning community for evaluation participants. So we had group TA calls where we joined all of the participants together to ask questions about how the evaluation was going, to share challenges, and also ideas for strategies to improve recruitment and retention throughout the study. And we also provided folks with individualized feedback about how they were doing in terms of survey progress. So we sent them weekly email updates where we said, here's how much data you've collected, here's how much you have to go, here's how you compare to everybody else in the evaluation, so that they could sort of see how they were doing and feel like they were a part of this larger evaluation process. Additionally, we created individualized results reports for each of the sites. So after each study time point, so after the pretest, the post-test, and the follow-up, each individual site got a results report, which I'll share in a second, that showed information about their youth who had participated in the study, so that they weren't just, you know, throwing their data into the collective whole, but also getting some feedback about how they were doing specifically. And then last but not least, we facilitated connections between the programs. So we said, hey, you know, Bob and Susie, you guys are both really working with a lot of rural youth, like let's figure out, are there ways that you could combine your efforts to serve that population more efficiently, right? So facilitating connections throughout the process so that they could build communities that would last longer than the evaluation itself. And I wanted to share a few of the specific methods that we used for providing individualized feedback and evaluation capacity building services. So as I mentioned, we developed these individualized results reports. So this is just like the first page of one of those results reports, but it had a breakdown of demographics for all of the youth who participated in the study, so they could say, okay, like, how does this compare to what I thought my members looked like? Does this seem representative for me? And we also had individualized calls with each of the programs to review the results reports with the evaluators so that they could get some feedback about, okay, does this look like what you're expecting it to look like. And actually, a lot of the programs use this information to try to actually inform their future recruitment efforts. So when they got this feedback, some of them said, oh, actually, like, I thought I was serving more African Americans than I am. I'd like to really amp that up. So we developed those individualized results reports, and they also included information about outcomes. So looking at changes from pretest to follow-up. There were no inferential statistics with this because they're pretty small sample sizes, but we did want to at least share some individualized information back with each of the programs about how their kids were changing over time. And then we also gave programs this checklist of evaluation sustainability strategies where we said, you know, tell us, like, what you're really interested in. Like, what do you want to do? Like, what are your evaluation priorities moving forward? And we had them sort of select which topics they were most interested in, and then we provided individualized TA on each of those topics specific to the program. And I have just a little chart here where you can see, like, of the topics, like, what things people were most interested in. And most of the TA that we provided was really around data collection and maintenance, so folks were really interested in building up these data collection systems. Like I said at the beginning, like, really establishing a data management system for their program. And then the second most common topics were around recruitment and retention, specifically around opportunity youth. So a lot of programs were new to the opportunity youth population and wanted to understand how they could intensify their recruitment and retention efforts for that group. Okay, so just to put it all together and recap what I've talked about today, so how do you assess if it's a good fit? So first, when you think about an evaluator, you want to select an evaluator that has the relevant statistical and subject matter knowledge, someone who has organizational and interpersonal skills and the right tools and capacity to implement this kind of complex evaluation. And then you want to select programs that have similarity, organizational support and capacity, an agreed upon comparison group, consistent start and stop dates, and then well-established member management and tracking systems. So once you decide it's a good fit, how can you use it to promote learning? So the things we've talked about today would be involving sites in the planning and execution of the evaluation, creating a learning community, providing individualized feedback throughout the evaluation process, helping programs to identify their own ECB goals, and then providing relevant resources to help sites meet their evaluation capacity building goals. So thank you all so much for joining us today on the call. I'm going to hand things over to Linda to provide some concluding remarks, and then we will open the floor up for discussion and Q&A.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to provide a few brief remarks. I like the concept of building learning community. In any funding environment, whether it's public or private money, it is critical for programs to be able to demonstrate impact. It's wonderful to create opportunities where we can learn best practices and share resources as we are today. National Service creates a wonderful opportunity for communities to solve pressing community needs. Everyone has something to offer. Programs that recruit and involve opportunity youth play a dual role. They provide mentoring and support to a young person who in turn uses that growth to impact their community. If done well, the impact can be enormous. Through service, opportunity youth who receive mentoring, coaching, or skills training are positioned for success after their service ends. The lessons we learn from this evaluation will give us valuable insight into how we can continue to support this important service opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. So what we'll do is we'll open it up for Q&A and any comments from people in the room. Brad, would you let everyone know what they need to do?
Certainly. If you would like to ask a question over the phone at this time, please press star then one. Please unmute your phone and record your name at the prompt. If at any time while you're in the queue and your question has been answered, you can remove your request by pressing star two. Once again, that is star one for questions over the phone at this time.
Thank you. So while we wait for any comments, is there someone in the room who would like to follow up?
We also have a few questions like on the screen that folks have asked. We can share if you want to start with those, or we can.
I had one question. This is Sherry. You mentioned that it was really important to have the common outcomes that folks were measuring, but how important was it that the program activities were really aligned towards the outcomes that people were trying to achieve?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So I think definitely having alignment in program activities is essential, because otherwise, you know, if they're looking at common outcomes, but they're not actually doing the same thing, then you can't make causal claims about what are the impacts of what they're doing, right? So definitely having alignment. But within the bundle, for example, there were some sites that are maybe a little more focused on employment and others that are maybe a little more focused on educational outcomes, for example. And so I think it's important to maybe have like a minimum criteria of like, okay, yes, this is something that we're working on and we do have some shared activities, but I think it's also okay for there to be some variability in terms of how those activities are implemented across sites.
Thank you. Okay, so now I see the questions. So let's see, here's a question from Stephanie Shuley. Are there existing member management interaction systems that you would recommend for this type of effort?
We actually, so as a part of this process, we developed a handout with resources for conducting a bundled evaluation, and we can make that available. And that handout actually has some really great information about member tracking systems. I don't want to recommend a particular brand out of it because we're in a position to endorse that, but I do have some articles that are on that list that would highlight pros and cons of different member management and tracking systems. There's a great article, I think, from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that talks about pros and cons of different member management tracking systems for nonprofits, and so we can share that. That would be great for sure.
Thanks. So a second question here is, what is an estimated cost for such an evaluation, total and per agency? I think you said there were 19 different sites or 19 programs.
Right. So there were 19 different sites.
Do you want to talk about the cost of the evaluation?
Say the question again.
So what is an estimated cost for such an evaluation, total and per agency? I think you said there were 19 sites.
The total and per agency, I'm not sure what the distinction is between that.
I think they're talking about for the program level cost.
Right.
Okay.
For the 19.
So the programs didn't pay at all for the evaluation.
Yeah.
So this evaluation was funded exclusively through CNCS, although I will say that programs did contribute in terms of time and effort, right?
Do you have an estimate of how much time it took staff?
We actually did ask them that on our last group call with the programs, and they said the estimate was around 10 hours per week,
10 hours.
During data collection period.
Okay.
So sometimes a little bit more than that when they were kind of in the midst of the data collection, but 10 hours on average.
Mm-hmm. And just to the cost question, I would say that, as Becca said, the costs came out of the budget of the Office of Research and Evaluation, and costs varied by year. So certainly the years in which the intensive data collection were going on and the years in which intensive technical assistance was happening were more obviously costly than years when it was more about planning or writing up final reports. Overall, I'd say over the four-year period, it was about $1 million that was the cost of the project. And again, financially, the participating sites did not have to pay for that, but certainly people had to invest their time. It was, as Becca said throughout her presentation, designed to be experiential and participatory, and as such, it really did take time. So there was certainly cost on that end. But financially, that was a cost that was borne by the agency.
So, Brad, do you have any questions on the phone?
At this time, we have had no questions on the phone, but once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one.
I have a question. Actually, I have more than one question, but I can hold as other questions come up. So one, I want to know of the eight fascinating talk. Thank you. I've always been hearing this bundling, and I wanted to know more about it. Really neat. So of the 19 sites that participated, did they stay with you all through the 4 years? Did you have any that dropped off? Was 19 the final number or the number you started with and ended with?
Yeah, so we had 19 sites who started and ended, right?
We did only one that came back, formula funding.
Okay.
Yeah, but I will say that as the process went on, there were some sites that became kind of less willing to engage and communicate. So that is something I think, making sure when you select the sites at the beginning, like really communicating that this is not just like a super fast process and that there's an expectation that you're going to be involved over an extended period of time, I think is really important. But all 19 sites did stay through the end of the evaluation.
That's very creditable.
Yeah.
And then if we don't have any other questions, I can. I was just curious if you could maybe talk about, like, I'm sure there have been umpteen challenges that you came across in this whole process, but maybe, like, one or two of, like, the biggest challenges you guys encountered while doing this?
I think someone actually asked a similar question on the online chat, right? So someone said, I have a question saying, what were the major challenges in the bundled evaluation? How did you overcome them? And I think... Honestly, there are a lot of things that are challenging about this type of multi-site evaluation. One of the things that I think was a big challenge is working with opportunity youth, they have a tendency to move, to drop out, mm-hmm. to not be in contact, and so retention was a significant challenge in the current evaluation and trying to maintain that continuity over time. And I think I mentioned the member management systems were also sometimes not as developed as we had hoped for sites, and so having really good tracking in place to stay in contact with youth and encourage mm-hmm. them to participate, especially for comparison group sites, that was really challenging. So
You know, it's one thing if you're an AmeriCorps grantee and we're working with you really directly, you have an incentive to participate in the evaluation. If you're a community partner and you're not receiving any funding, like, the incentive to go track down Joe Smith is not necessarily there. And so, so you know, that made it challenging to maintain sample sizes over time, and particularly among comparison youth. So that was really tough. Another thing I think is the rolling enrollment piece was really challenging, so I alluded to that. That's one of the things that we were like, we would probably not do this with programs with rolling enrollment, which is unfortunate because they're doing great work. It's not that we think that we don't want to evaluate them, but just logistically, you know, if you are a nonprofit and you have two staff members and I'm asking one of those two staff members to administer surveys to everybody who applies to your program over a 6 or 7 month period, That's a big ask, you know. And so I think like it would be much easier for programs who have a really clear start and stop date. So it's like, okay, we're doing this, but we're only having to do it once. We could do it and be done. So those are a couple of the challenges. Adrian, do you have other ones that you want to add?
The only one that I would add, and it's related to what you just said, is organizational capacity. So when we started this, we obviously wanted to select grantees who had a basic level of capacity to be able to participate, but not so much capacity that they wouldn't benefit from the experiential piece. And so in trying to get that sweet spot, I think we may have included some programs who didn't meet that baseline criteria of having the capacity to really participate well. So as Becca mentioned, you know, programs with two staff or programs with one staff, programs with really high turnover, it's a problem in nonprofits in general, but it, I think, tends to be a bit of a bigger problem for some of our AmeriCorps state and national programs. The infrastructure within these organizations as well in terms of tracking data, selecting members, keeping, you know, good recruitment practices, systematic recruitment practices, all those kinds of things, I think, needed to be very tight for this evaluation. And unfortunately, we found out in the middle of data collection that, you know, some of these practices weren't quite as rigorous as we had hoped and needed them to be.
I have another one online. What participation rate did you get from the control group participants? How did you incentivize participation from those participants?
So everyone who participated in the study was offered a financial incentive for their participation. So for the first two study periods. So for the pretest and the post-test, it was a $10 incentive, and for the follow-up, it's a $20 incentive because it's much harder to find them when they're not actively enrolled in the program. Within the comparison group, I don't have it in front of me, but I think I'm not sure exactly what the rates were, but they were lower among comparison youth participants. And that definitely was a challenge in terms of incentivizing that. So one of the ways that we addressed that was by working directly with community partners. And a lot of our programs mentioned kind of having to spend some social capital for the evaluation. So really working with partners that they had had existing relationships with and saying to them, this is really important to us. Please help us out, help us find these kids, like communicate to them why this is important and get them to be engaged with the evaluation. And so with comparison youth, I think that was a lot easier for sites, for comparison youth that were like in a site, whereas like for the comparison youth that were program applicants, like who never like had any contact with any program, I think it was especially challenging to like track them down and encourage them to participate. But we did a lot of hands-on follow-up, so everybody who participated in the study, we sent them emails, and then if we also sent them text reminders throughout the study period. So, like, we sent them postcards and said, hey, by the way, you're going to have the study coming up in a couple of months. We'd really encourage you to participate. If your address has changed, let us know. So kind of facilitating that communication throughout the process. And really just trying to make sure that we have up-to-date contact information on the kids, and then also following up over the phone. So we did like 3 rounds of email outreach and then phone outreach for everybody as well. And we also solicited information from their primary and secondary contacts. So we had like their parents or friends and family
So we would contact those individuals and follow up with them if we still hadn't heard from the youth.
So this is similar to what you're talking about, but just to maybe dive into this a little bit more. Did you do anything specific to incentivize programs to remain involved in the process throughout the 4 years? So not the participants, but the programs. Did participating programs formally sign on in a way to guarantee their involvement from start to finish?
Did they formally sign on?
I wasn't involved with that.
So we used a rubric. I think I mentioned when I was talking before that we had a pretty systematic recruitment process. We used a rubric to assess who we thought would be good participants. They consented to participate, but they didn't sign a formal MOU. I think it was pretty clear to everyone involved this was a really valuable opportunity, not only to participate in a free evaluation, but to participate in a really rigorous free evaluation. And also, to give credit to our grantees, when we offer these kinds of capacity-building resources, they tend to be very receptive, and uptake tends to be very high and positive. And so I think the fact that we retained, you know, pretty much every grantee mm-hmm. that participated speaks to their willingness to participate and the value they place on the capacity-building work that we do. Mm-hmm.
I have a few more online. I just want to look around the room, see if there's any specific questions. I'll continue reading. Okay, so, and on the phone, are there any?
We do have two responses on the phone.
Can you go ahead and ask them to place their call?
Right. Certainly. Our first question is from Xiaodong Zhang. You may go ahead.
It was already addressed. It's the one about challenges.
Thank you.
And then we do have another one from Madeline Chesson. Your line is open.
Hi. Yes, my question has to do with looking at an umbrella agency and whether or not you could use this same method to look at internal programs. So applying it rather than looking at multiple agencies, looking at multiple programs within one agency. Thank you.
I can take this one. So I would absolutely think you could. The cool thing about this methodology is that it doesn't necessarily have to be an impact evaluation. You could use other methods too. You could do an outcome evaluation. You could do, you know, case studies. The important part is, though, that you just need to make sure that the outcomes that the units would be targeting are the same, that the approach, the intervention is the same, if not, you know, identical as possible. I think there's actually some precedent for other federal agencies using similar methodologies to this bundling approach. They used it with, it wasn't an umbrella organization, but it was a grant-making program that made a series of, like, intermediary grants that use an approach like this. But you could definitely do it with an umbrella organization.
Sherry, do you know of any others?
So,
any more on the phone?
We have no more questions on the phone at this time.
Okay, I have a few more online. For an organization interested in convening a group of programs for a bundled evaluation and serving in the role that CNCS did in this case, do you have any recommendations for how the convening organization can solicit funding to support the work? A lot of people thinking. If anyone on the phone has any suggestions, please let us know.
So this might be good to get some clarification. I think one reason why this worked out is because we had the funding. I mean, through the Office of Research and Evaluation, we were able to spend time developing the idea because we knew that we would be able to budget for that. I don't know how it would have gone had we just had the idea but no funding. I suppose you could potentially look for evaluation grant money. I don't know if there's too many foundations or organizations that give out grant money to do evaluation work to where you could then fund this. So I guess our experience may be a little unique because we had the funding ready to go, if I'm not misunderstanding the question.
Now, I had a similar question about it when I first heard what you all were doing, about whether there would be foundations out there that are interested in capacity building for nonprofits, and I think that those exist, but, you know, we haven't done any research to sort of identify who those folks are, but it might be something that we would look into given interest across number of grantees from our different federal partners.
And I do know that there are other nonprofit organizations and foundations that do intensive capacity building work in an experiential way,
mm-hmm.
but they control their own funding in that case.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of like Propel Med.
Yep. Positive evidence.
Mm-hmm. They are in control of that. They're not an intermediary seeking funding mm-hmm. to implement a bundle.
Okay, I have another. Are there any resources or directives for creating a special education toolkit for nonprofits that might fall more quickly under the gifted and talented side of the spectrum versus the disability side to empower the opportunity of growth within your mission?
I don't know if I understand the question.
I'm thinking that not only are you, so Jessica, you posed that question. Can you clarify a little more what you mean by?
Is the question around the target population?
I think it is about the target population.
I mean, I think the methodology would apply across, regardless of the target population, if that's the question.
Right. So I have a question in terms of, you had a lot of participation from the different sites in terms of getting input for the measures you mentioned, I believe, in the data collection. Can you describe a little bit how that input strengthened or challenged the way you did the data collection, or how the sites were able to use their knowledge to increase their response rate and how they created the data collection techniques?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a few like specific examples that I could give you. In terms of the first part, so in terms of providing feedback on the measures, I think that was really useful in the sense of like really just making sure that we were measuring the right things for their program, so having conversations about, is this something that you would really expect to see change on? And it's interesting because a lot of that actually, I think a lot of the more useful conversations that we had out of that came actually a little bit later. So when we collected the first round of data, we had a lot of really interesting conversations around the individualized feedback reports where sites were like, oh, I really thought that kids would be improving in self-efficacy, but actually like their self-efficacy is off the charts at baseline. And so it turns out like maybe this really isn't the best measure for our program. And so that did have an impact on sort of how we thought about the results moving forward and which measures we really chose to emphasize as impact measures in the outcome study. And so I think that was really useful, is having that feedback throughout the process to hear from programs to say, okay, like actually the data looks a little different than what I thought, but this is changing like the way that I think about how our program operates. And actually, like, it's not just about like improving kids' self-efficacy, but actually like, we're really expecting to see change on like some of these more behavioral outcomes. Like we're really thinking that kids are going to go out and be getting a job, right? And so having those kinds of conversations was really helpful. There's also a lot of feedback about language, and so, like, trying to make the language more accessible for teens. And a lot of those sites, as we were having those initial planning conversations, I think when sites were able to be involved in the process, they also developed some of their own mechanisms for increasing participation. So, it was interesting, as the process was going on, some of the sites started to talk about how they would introduce the study, which wasn't something that we had required them to do. Like we told them, like, make sure that you have a really clear testing environment, but we didn't require them to say like why the study was important. But a lot of the sites sort of started doing that on their own. Like they would sit the kids down and say like, this is really important to us as an organization, and we care about you, and like we want to have your honest feedback about your experience. And when they did that, like participation rates really skyrocketed. And so, like once some of the sites started telling us that they were doing that, we were able to recommend that as a best practice to other sites. And so I think it really allowed for a lot of adaptive learning in terms of like best practices to improve recruitment and retention for the study.
Consent was another big one I remember that came up. A lot of the youth were very nervous about sharing data, especially because there were some sensitive things we were asking about. And so being able to, like, have the program have the dialogue with them of, like, this is what we're going to do with your data. This is how you're going to see this come back to you. And this is when the report will be ready. And, like Becca said, coming up with language that made sense or, like, a little intro that made sense about, what is the point of this and you know, you can consent or not consent was a very interesting dialogue. I think it came up a couple of times from some programs.
Yeah, and I think, like, around that also a lot of folks had questions about, like, confidentiality versus anonymity was a real, like, learning point. So we spent a lot of time talking to programs about, like, no, your data is not anonymous because we have to track you over time. So we have to know that it's you, but it is confidential. We're not going to share it back with the program. So that was a real, like, point of learning and discussion for a lot of sites.
Sorry, I keep asking questions, but I had a question on this. So you use surveys, right? You collected survey data. Did the, and I know the sites participated in developing the survey.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I wanted to know if they had the option of adding additional questions if they wanted to track additional stuff that they were tracking and then reporting back the core set of questions to you, or was it the exact same survey that had to be used by everyone?
So everybody in the study took the same survey, but one of the things that came up is that many of the sites kind of already had existing data collection procedures, mm-hmm. and so sometimes they would do, like, our survey, and they would have, like, their own survey that they would also do, or, like, a survey for another funding agency, for example. And so they weren't, like, adding questions to our survey, but they had kind of separate surveys.
Okay.
And that actually... I would not recommend that as a practice, because what ended up happening is, in a lot of cases, the youth kind of felt the survey fatigue and burnout from participating in all of these data collections, and especially because, I mean, AmeriCorps already has, in like, surveys that folks complete as a part of their exit process, and so, like, they would do the AmeriCorps survey, and sometimes the programs would set it up where, like, today is survey day, like, here's your AmeriCorps survey, here's the bundled survey, here's your survey from this other funder. And, like, the kids would be really frustrated because they're doing the same information over and over again. And so I think, like, one thing that we've talked a little bit about is, like, in the future, really trying to consolidate those. And so, I mean, I think that there is a possibility to maybe add in a few questions mm-hmm. that are specific to programs.
Right.
But more broadly, also just thinking about, like, ways that we could streamline that data collection or share the data, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if we're already collecting it for AmeriCorps, like, is there a way that we could get the consent process set up so we could, like, facilitate that data sharing so they're not having to provide their name and their age and their gender, like, 12 times?
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about how you analyze the data?
Yeah, so let's see. We'll share the full report, so I'm not allowed to talk about this. Not yet. We're not talking about the actual results yet. But so, like, for the actual data, what we did is we used a multi-level model, and so we basically accounted for the first thing we did was we matched the kids using a process called propensity score matching. And so for those of you who might not be super familiar with that, basically it's a statistical process where you account for a bunch of different characteristics of the kids that might impact the probability that they are in the program or not. And then you basically give each kid a score, like, this kid seems really likely to be in the treatment versus the comparison group, and then you match individuals who have similar scores. So what that did is that took our full sample into a much smaller sample of just the final match sample. And not all of the sites ultimately ended up in the final match sample because some of the sites didn't have enough similarity in the treatment and comparison kids or didn't have enough of a sample at post-test, right? So, like I said, retention was definitely a challenge. And so for some of the sites, there just weren't enough people to be able to do that final match. But for the subset of sites, I think we had 15 sites that were included in the final match sample. So once we take that data, we ran basically either logistic or linear multi-level mixed effects models, which I won't get super technical about, but we are predicting each of the individual outcomes based on characteristics at baseline. And then also accounting for the nesting of individuals within sites. And so that's treated as a random effect in the model. And so it allows us to say, okay, yes, we've created groups that are equivalent at baseline, so that's the matching. And then now that we have these groups that are equivalent at baseline, are they different at the final follow-up? And after we control for all of their characteristics at baseline, do we still see this difference as a result of treatment participation? And in the models, we also did some analyses looking at interactions of baseline characteristics and treatment for key outcomes. So, for example, like looking at whether kids who had some criminal history at baseline, were those kids more or less likely to have criminal involvement at post-test based on their participation in the program? Sorry, that's kind of a long answer, but, but I hope. So, yeah, so linear and logistic mixed effects models. So, I guess the short answer.
So, we're almost at time, but I want to ask Brad, is there anybody else on the phone?
We've had no further questions on the phone.
Okay, so I want to give Linda and Sherry an opportunity if you have any thoughts on what you heard in terms of the program or the federal agency perspective.
Sure. I mean, I think that it's not very surprising that the programs all wanted to participate because this is such an opportunity for them to learn more about improving their systems as well as to ensure that they are reaching the types of kids that they wanted to reach with the program. So that was wonderful to hear. And what other wonderful way would you have to be able to have hands-on experience, hands-on learning experience? So it's always great to hear that programs are really taking advantage of that. So I'm excited to see the results.
Thank you.
Yeah, the same. I think my interest stays as peaked as it has been
to hear the results.
Yes, I will continue to stalk people for that, but I also think that it's something I see no reason why any one of our partner agencies wouldn't be able to do the same thing with their grantees and, you know, some of the questions that you've been talking through in terms of sharing the data, right, and, like, what are we already collecting where we could do sort of a bundled evaluation without even really having to add a whole other layer of evaluation and programming.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of where our conversation needs to go. And, you know, whether we could do that across these agencies is a bigger question, but I think certainly within each of the agencies, this is a capacity that we could help add into their toolbox. So I think it's really useful.
Okay. Mary, any final words?
That's great.
Great. Well, thank you so much for everyone on the phone and in the room, and we look forward to you all calling in, maybe in our next webinar, which should be in March. So anyway, thank you. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your participation on today's conference call. At this time, all parties may disconnect.